Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 534. Got a special guest joining me today, as it is now January, so baseball, best ball season is ramping up. You know, football, they're doing playoff stuff. It's fun. It is what it is, but we got some fun stuff coming up over here. So I have a special guest from Underdog Fantasy. You can find him on Twitter at Too Much Tuma. Brendan Tuma, how we doing, my friend?
Bubba, I want to thank you for having me. It was during the pandemic. At some point, I was listening to an episode you did about, if you can recall, it was 90s. I want to say it was 1998 or the home run chase.
It was
something
season,
like that. Yeah, like a retrospective episode. I thought it was a really cool idea. I really enjoyed the episode. So it's surreal for me to be on with you now.
I appreciate it. That's funny, too, because it was me, Toby, and Brock. I remember that episode very well because it was more like pandemic. You know how it goes. We had to figure out anything for content at that point. And as just baseball fans, that was such a wild season with records we're seeing broken all over the place these days and what could have been and what was and everything. And we've thought about picking new seasons to kind of play with once in a while. It'd be a lot of fun. I hope we don't have to do that kind of stuff, if you know what I mean. But if it comes down to it, I definitely know we'll dig into some more baseball for sure. But I appreciate the kind words. Before we get here, I want to let you plug away Underdog Fantasy. I'm not going to say what site this used to be unless I'm allowed to, because I used to play there a lot. Obviously, I play on Underdog too, but it's an awesome format. It's, to me, very user-friendly. The app is one of the better apps you can find out there. I'm not just kissing up because you're on the show, but it's one of those where, like, you know, NFBC, until you get used to it, can be intimidating to some. The price points are very different. Underdog has got price points for everybody. It's got it's super quick. You can do quick drafts, whatever. So I'll give you the floor real quick. Let's share the floor on Underdog before we dig in some more on it.
Definitely, yeah. So I think a lot of people come to Underdog through football, and that's definitely what we're most known for. We just closed Best Ball Mania 3, and you know there's a big grand prize for that winner. But we also have some really great baseball games, both during the off season and in season. It's best ball. It's tournament based. You know, similar to NFBC, there's overall prize winners. So basically what we have up right now is a $5 contest. It's a tournament. It's called the Bullpen. You know, the idea is we're starting to warm up for baseball season and all that. There will be more tournaments, more drafts coming as we get closer to the season. But this is really the biggest thing we have going on right now and what a lot of people are talking about when they're referring to Underdog MLB Best Ball right now. So it's basically, you know, similar to overalls in the NFBC. It's like it's a $5 tournament. You have your 12-team draft. And you're competing against, you know, those players. But then there's an overall component where we get into the playoffs for 2 weeks at a time. There's three playoff rounds. And then ultimately there's, you know, a big winner at the end. And then there's other prize points for everyone who at least makes the playoffs.
Yeah, perfect. I know I've done the football ones a lot and, you know, you get to advance to the next rounds and all that kind of stuff. And it's a blast. And I'm going to get more into baseball this year for sure. Cause like I said, I used to play all the different, even the daily stuff on the other, like it's awesome. It's quick. It's simple. You can do it while you're getting your Starbucks in the morning, whatever you do. Like it's super fun in that regard. But before we get to that, I at least want to give you some pub here. You don't just like, you're not just behind the scenes with Underdog. You actually produce content for Underdog. So why don't you like let everybody know what you do in season or even you're doing, you already actually wrote some stuff for preseason. So what do you got going over there at Underdog?
Yeah, so I got to Underdog about a year ago. I work on the MLB and NFL sports information team. So like we have our Twitter accounts, Underdog NFL, Underdog MLB. We like to think that we're the fastest and the best with the news. It's typically the case. So if you are, you know, in a baseball fan and you're just looking for a news or lineups page, we have Underdog at Underdog underscore underscore MLB. So yeah, I'm doing a lot of that stuff. Right now, a big focus of mine is promoting our best ball games, then eventually our in-season games. I don't know about you. I came from a fantasy background of playing a lot of traditional season-long 5x5, you know, managed leagues, waiver wire every weekend, and I love that format. I really do. But I feel like there's a lot more out there these days than just that type of fantasy. So whether, you know, best ball is a whole other game, I think when you have good player takes, you can have an edge in best ball, and then there's all these other strategies to it.
100% agree.
Sorry,
continue on. Yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say too, and then in season, I find, you know, just from what like we do every day, which is, you know, like studying baseball through a fantasy lens, I think that's gonna lend itself more and more to prop betting. And you know, I know so many people who aren't even the biggest baseball fans, but they love firing off, you know, some over under strikeout totals, or is this player going to homer tonight? And Underdog has all that sorts of stuff as well. So both off season and in season, I think there's definitely a lot to be doing.
Yeah. And that'll lead me to my first shameless plug. One of the biggest reasons, not just because I've been wanting to told Brendan off the show that I've wanted to talk to him for a long time, but at Gaining the Edge with myself, Curlin, SP streamer, Mike Simeone and Jorge Montanez, we partnered up with Underdog. And if you use promo code GTE, you get 100% match bonus up to $100 on your first deposit if you're new to Underdog. And one reason I think that's great, because we will have best ball content. But one thing you hit on there was the prop bets. We'll have all kinds of things because I do DFS. So that helps like keep you into the focus on prop bets. But I want to plug Simeone because he does his streaming pitchers. He's going to be very good at strikeout props, as you mentioned, like really, really easy. He's so tuned into that I don't even think I'm going to care. I'm just let him tell me what he wants to bet for the day and go from there. So I want to plug that along. It's one thing I think people might not know enough about Underdog is it's not just best ball. There's a lot of stuff going on, and that's really cool about that as well. Let's get into the best ball, though. We will get to the prop bets later when we get to in-season content, but best ball is where it's at. You mentioned you got the $5 bullpen tournament coming on. It's kind of like the puppy in football, get you going in that. You mentioned it's 12 teams. Can you give us a brief kind of idea on what the roster sizes are and the formats in these kind of leagues?
Yeah, definitely. So it's 12 team drafts and you take 20 players per draft. And this is something that we talked a lot about this offseason, especially as we're trying to get more serious about our baseball offerings, is should we cater more towards, you know, something like the NFBC, where it's, you know, more roto based or, you know, more positional based form of fantasy. And we ultimately decided not to. What we like to think at Underdog is it's a low barrier to entry. So, you know, anyone can play, but then if you want to become an expert, you know, there's still the opportunity for that. So our positions, for instance, it's only pitcher, infielder, and outfielder. And when I first found out about that, I can say this about Underdog, I was like, oh, well, that's not fantasy baseball. You know, there's not as much strategy in there or everything. And I think that's a super valid, you know, thing to think right away. The deeper you get into the game, though, like there absolutely is a lot of strategy with it. I personally have been approaching it from a macro level analysis first. We can get into some of it, but like things like outfielders being undervalued, for instance, like that is the equivalent of avoiding the running back dead zone for people who are familiar with, you know, football best ball strategy. And then from there, okay, so outfielders are undervalued. We want to push them up our draft boards. And then from there, you know, fantasy players can hone in on, okay, so which outfielders are undervalued? And then you can use your individual player analysis, you know, to kind of make those decisions. So I think that's like definitely the first thing to get across to people is that the three positions, it's pitcher, infield, outfield, and it's points based. And I know that can be a turnoff initially for some people, but it presents, you know, this whole other world of strategy of, you know, figuring out the game.
No, and I like that about it because I'm glad you guys didn't change because, A, you mentioned how it's like opens it up to more people, which is, I think, something I try to help preach. It's like I like playing the NPC, but I also like I understand the price points aren't there. So like I love stuff like this, like $5 to get into a tournament is freaking awesome. I literally, you know, one less coffee a week, one less trip to wherever you go get lunch for the week, whatever, stuff like that. It really isn't that hard to do. So that makes it fun. And I also like that you didn't change it too much because it makes your system unique. And that's what gives it the ability to, I guess, different strategies, like you said. Like you can, you know, focus on your roto formats over here and do this, but then at the same time, you take it over here. You still know the player pool, but it obviously changes. We know leagues are like streaming towards OBP, which is a big points based type thing. A lot of common players play points leagues, head to head points leagues. That's like a good thing that's out there. Like we use the NFBC a lot because it's like the common nomenclature, especially on Twitter. But the common fan plays like a head-to-head 10-team ESPN league or Yahoo. Like, they're not playing NFBC. So the points-based underdog is probably more formidable to those players. And that's kind of why I want to push that to them and say, like, hey. And I even told the Discord for Gaining the Edge, I said, hey, if you guys have any questions, I'll have Brendan on more times or I'll have more underdog people on. We can make this a thing for you guys to help you to learn things. So I think it's really cool in that regard. You mentioned infield, outfield, and pitcher. It's a 20-player roster. How many, I guess technically it's not starting because it's best ball, so it puts your best players out there, but how many fill your roster that are active rosters?
Yeah, so Underdog, it's a weekly game. You know, a lot of fantasy that we play is on a weekly basis. So you start three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, and then one flex. And that flex can be either an infielder or an outfielder. And then you'd have like 10 bench spots each week. And like you said, it's best ball, so you don't have to decide who starts for your lineup that week, just whoever scores the most points. That, again, you know, can also lead into some strategy. Should you sell out for upside? Should you go for steady floor players? If you took some upside early, should you then combine that with floor late? There's all sorts of things like that. And obviously there's no waiver wire. And like, for me, that was, you know, definitely as I've done more and more analysis on it, that's been a part where there's a big difference, I think, because you really want to make sure your players are, you only get 20 roster spots and you can't add or subtract to it throughout the season. So you really want to make sure your players are playing. So I keep coming back to the comparison of Luis Ortiz on the Pirates, who, if I'm playing, you know, in a 12 or 14 team league with my buddies, like I might take a last round flyer on Luis Ortiz, see if he hits right away. And if not, I'll drop him and pick someone else up. Obviously in best ball, you can't do that. And therefore I don't think that he's the type of pitcher, even though he's an upside pick. And, you know, if he does hit, the payoff could be really big. I don't think that he's like the right player for this format. Just because, again, you want so much projectability, you want, you know, floor even late, in your drafts.
Yeah. It's the old nomenclature that we see around a lot. It's at bats, innings pitch, innings pitch, innings pitch. Like there's just something about it, even if it's not the quote unquote best quality, like ceiling guy, like you said, just accumulating the points. That's the name of the game. It's just accumulating the points. So even if it's a Michael Brantley who plays six games a week, he's probably a lot better than a lot of other outfielders you're thinking of as like your fourth outfielder or fifth outfielder or something. Like there's a lot of viability to that, especially in a format like this. And that's why it's fun to have this conversation, kind of open the mind, I guess, to other options besides your standard. Like, you know, take your chance on Luis Ortiz. Go take your chance on, you know, some of the other big Dick Jordan out of St. Louis, or some of these other guys that are, you know, really trying to make a move. Matt Mervis, if you really think he's going to make the team, but he might not. He might start in AAA, and now you have an empty roster spot until whenever that happens. And that could really kill you, because if you have three more injuries or something, and yeah, that team's pretty much shot. So it's like, what risk do you want to take is a very, very valid point. Back to these contests, the overall ones, especially like the one you have now and some others, there's usually, like in any overall contest, there's like a limit to how many you could have in there. What's the limit on most of these contests? Like, is it 20 teams, 50 teams, 100 teams? What do you guys have usually?
Oh my God. I knew I was thinking about this before we recorded. I got to pull it up and make sure that I know here, because I can't play in these contests as an employee. They do set up some employee only contests.
I hope you get to like, yeah, you got to know the system a little bit.
Yeah. But every now and then there's, a few things. So, hold on, I'm pulling it up right here. Okay. So it's as big as I thought. It's 150 entries. So that's what I was talking about before about the, and that's like per tournament. So right now we have the $5 bullpen up. Eventually we're going to have our $25, the dinger, which is kind of like the best ball mania version of football, but for baseball. And then there will probably be another $5 tournament, but we'll see. There's also just 12 straight up 12 team drafts. If you don't want to do the whole tournament structure, there's various price points for just to do a 12 team draft. But yeah, that's what I was talking about a bit with anyone can play. You know, if you have a buddy who, I know I have a few friends like this who around March, spring training, right before opening day, they start texting me about baseball. We talk a little bit, but they don't want to be talking about baseball in August and September. But I do have a lot of friends like that. If you do want to, you know, just fire off some drafts, you can easily do that. But like I said, there's, if you want to try to like master this game, you can do up to 150 entries in each tournament. You can do, you know, various tournaments. There's a lot of ways. I like to view it as a portfolio. This is a lot of people, you know, with Best Ball NFL view it this way as well, whereas, you know, it's not like you just have your one league. And if you miss out on Christian Javier in that one league and he was your guy and someone sniped you on him, like you just don't get him. Mm-hmm. If you do enough volume of drafts, you can say I'm 50% exposed to Christian Javier. And that's kind of where you can get your edge. That's how you can, you know, fade players just by almost never taking them over the course of 100 drafts. And that's what I find fun about that. And the ADP changes as the off season goes along. So you can get, so that's, I'm getting a little bit into the weeds with it.
No, but that's fine. Like I love it because this is where it really gets fun. Cause you mentioned like the ADP changes because people aren't playing yet, but then they'll start to play. So it'll change a whole bunch of things. Like you mentioned, I laugh because it happens every year. Like I made a sarcastic tweet the other day that obviously not everybody takes sarcastically, but I said, oh, look, football season's over because now we have more people in the content world. And it's same thing goes for followers. All of a sudden they start creeping in because, oh, it's baseball season now. Now we want to pay attention. And it's the same thing every year, just like you're talking about for your underdog, you know, signups come March because, you know, spring training, people are seeing pitchers and catchers and all that kind of stuff. You get the itch again. And then it's great because, like you said, the season starts and you can be done with best ball or you can do the end season content. You mentioned the 12 team standalone leagues, which is great as well, because over at Gaining the Edge, we've already talked about as a group of four of us that for the Patreon members we have, we're going to run some 12 team leagues because since they're standalones, we can do that. That's a beautiful thing. Like you said, you can just send out some links to some buddies and form your own leagues. We can just play for fun, like have a little, you know, in group contest. Not so easy to do on the best balls. Like if you want to do that, you basically just go, hey, I'm jumping into this one. If you want to jump in, go quick, because it is what it is. But you can still kind of do it. I've done it with some NFC contests already. We filled up like half of them. But that's kind of the goal. Like you said, is get everybody in there, have some fun, do your things, and fill these. And they go quick. They go really quick, even if they're slow. Like if it's a slow draft, what are the timers usually on slow drafts? If you know off the top of your head, I know like, you know, 2 hours, 4 hours or some, but I don't know what you guys got going at underdogs.
Yeah, so we have slow drafts that are 8 hours per pick, or if it's a fast draft, it's only 30 seconds per pick. So, yeah, I've done that myself, even with some of these employees drafts. I'm like, okay, I'm like just hanging out at the coffee shop, like you said, like waiting for my coffee to come. I'm going to jump in this draft right now. And then all of a sudden it's like flying by. So, again, and that's fine if that's how you want to do your one draft. But a lot of serious players I know prefer setting up on their desktop, having their rankings ready to go, all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I've done so many where I'm like bored on like a Tuesday night. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna jump in an underdog real quick. I'm sitting on the couch watching something. I'm like, yeah, let's just do a quick 30-second draft. Like, and it's fun. It's fun. It definitely works in that regard. You mentioned points-based scoring. For those that are kind of new to points-based, like I use the overall, like OBP is a big factor because you want to walks count, all those kind of things. Can you do like a quick run through on what exactly we're looking for in this points-based scoring?
Yeah, so I will say about the points-based scoring, again, like not a lot of people come from, you know, a rotisserie background or head-to-head categories. We just do points because that's, you know, just how the game was created here. I will say a very intentional decision we did make is to keep the points the same as last year, because things in 2021, our contest was different than it was in 2022. And we're trying to really get this game off the ground and running and building strategies and content around it. Again, the same, I use NFL as an example all the time just because it's been so well established and set up. But like every year we're seeing, okay, people are saying these running backs are overvalued in this range, so don't take them here. But then they start going so late, now it's like, are they a value again and things like that. And that's what we're trying to eventually get with our baseball game. So it is the same scoring as last year. You know, I can just like read it off quickly, but it's, you know, things like 3 points for a single, 6 for a double, 8 for a triple, 10 for a homer, 3 for a walk, two for an RBI, two for a run, four for a stolen base. You know, that's for hitting. We do say that hitters only get positive points. There's no negative points for hitters. And then for pitchers, it's, you know, five for a win, five for a quality start, three for a strikeout, three for an inning pitched, and then negative three for an earned run. So pitchers are the only players who can, you know, lose points like that. But unless it's a meltdown outing, you're not going to lose points like that. And when you chalk it up that way, similar to what you were saying, it's all about playing time, especially for hitters, because you're trying to accumulate, you know, fantasy points. And then for pitchers, it's a lot about volume as well. It's, you know, innings and quality starts are two huge components of it. So if you are taking that, you know, young breakout pick, if they're never going to go six innings, you know, they're never going to get quality starts. And, you know, that's a little different. Ratios are not as big of a thing in underdog drafts.
And that's a great point when you mentioned the quality starts. It stood out to me immediately because I play in two different leagues. I play in Barf with Mace, Justin Mason and company, where it's quality starts. And I remember the first year we did that, like 3 or 4 years ago. It's an eye-opener. It obviously, you know, guys have to go deep enough, but just how many guys consistently do it, it's a lot different than you'd expect. And secondly, I'm in an innings pitch league as well, and that's an accumulation of sorts, but it's quality accumulation versus just accumulation. There's a difference between that, because you mentioned the earned runs. Well, some guys we see go time and time again, will go six or seven innings, we give it five runs. And that's where it's like, well, is that really, like, is it, it's not getting your quality start, and he's giving you minus 15, like, hope he gets the win, I guess. So it's kind of a catch 22 there. In that regard, like, I'm going to hop around now, because we mentioned three infielders, three outfielders, three pitchers, and a flex, which is another hitter. Stick with the pitching for a minute, though, in that regard, with the accumulation, the quality starts. I'm looking at the ADP, and they're not going early, like, compared to what you'd expect with something like that serious. Do you think there's a sound strategy behind that because hitting's so important, or is that maybe an angle to go? It's like, hey, I'm going to go lock in, like, two aces right out the gate and lock in quality starts and innings and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I will say, you know, especially if people are new to the game or they're familiar with the game and just want to take, you know, their abilities to the next level, there is there's a lot of opportunity right now. There's edges to be had in underdog best ball on for MLB right now because we're so early. One, it's a new game. This is only the second year we've had this format up, so the efficiencies just aren't ironed out. And then two, this contest launched, the bullpen, the $5 one, launched at the very end of December, and so we're only, you know, a week or two into it, so the ADP has not been, you know, efficiently sorted out either. So now, you know, if you want to start gaining an edge, I think now is seriously the time to hop in there. Like you said, so I'm actually working on an article about this coming up, but about pitchers and exactly what you said about aces being a little bit undervalued. Right now, SP12 is going at the end of the fourth round. So basically everyone's SP1 going by the end of the fourth round is not what we're used to seeing in other drafts, but I think there's a real value to be had there. What happens at the start is that we sort the ADP by projection, and hitters are projected to score more points, so they stay towards the top of most people's drafts if they don't realize. But with starting pitchers, like you said, there's not that many these days who go deep into games to get quality starts and wins, so there's just less of them available. It's almost like a running back. In a football draft, you need to get them early or you're not going to get any production from that spot at all. And even worse than a running back, actually, there's not as many breakouts, late, like bankable breakouts that you can draft in January and know that they're going to be producing, you know, all summer long. So I think that taking advantage of some of this early ADP with the starting pitchers, not necessarily in round one, but in rounds 3, 4, 5 is a really sound approach right now.
Yeah, because, like, just for an example to the listeners out there, and it happened a lot towards the end of the season, like a guy like Spencer Strider, who everybody loves, it was until, like, late August, he wasn't really a consistent six-inning guy. So, like, and he probably will. I'm not saying he won't be this year, but you mentioned the breakout factor. It's like, okay, you're looking for, you know, Christian Javier's, Luis Garcia's of the world. They're not always going deep. Now, a guy like Framber Valdez, on the other hand, goes deep all the time. He gets over 200 innings. That's a big deal. You know, Alcantara does what Alcantara does, and so on and so forth. Where that's just kind of a different, like, even Charlie Morton goes a ton of innings, and no one likes him because it's Charlie Morton. But I'm not saying go run and pick Charlie Morton, but that's just an example of how he varies in this format compared to like your roto formats, compared to some other elite pitchers who just don't consistently go deep. Like Blake Snell probably wouldn't qualify in this format. No, but it's a different deep.
Yeah, and this is something that Scott White on CBS has talked about, not for Underdog, but just for fantasy in general, is that some of these older pitchers are being undervalued because a lot of people think, oh, they're old, they're going to break down. But what we see is that it's the younger pitchers who don't go as deep into games because they're on all sorts of pitch and innings limits. And the older pitchers is just like, they have rubber arms at this point. Like no one's telling Max Scherzer he's coming out at a certain point. You look at Charlie Morton's a great example. Last year, I was really into Adam Wainwright for Underdog drafts because I felt confident that he was going to go deep enough into games to get wins and quality starts. The Framber was another one who was undervalued at this time last year on Underdog, but the cat's a little bit out of the bag with someone like him right now. But that's the way you want to be thinking. In my opinion, is more of those starting pitchers who are going to be reliable and projectable, and less of that person who you might take in a 12-team managed league who you can drop after two starts if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thought process. That's why it stood out to me the second you mentioned the quality starts, because it just changes everything in your head real quick, because six innings is not what it used to be anymore. So even Shane McClanahan, who everybody loves, like he doesn't – with that, there's a lot of question marks there too. So that's will change things quite a bit. Let's talk hitters here, because they are the ones that are projected higher. So they're higher on the ADP list. You got infielders, you got outfielders, like we mentioned. Looking at the initial ADP here, it's like Judge, Soto, Acuna, J-Rod. But then Vlad is fifth because OBP, in my opinion. He stands out in that regard. But when you're looking at hitters, how do you kind of, at first glance, before we really dig into the positions between the two, how do you kind of evaluate that when you're going to draft? Because you mentioned, you know, first, second round, you can still take a hitter, but then attack pitching potentially. Not saying you have to, but that's an option. How do you go about it? Because obviously you're starting seven hitters a week compared to three pitchers, and you have only 20 roster spots. So how are you kind of focusing on hitters in your draft?
Yeah, I think my advice for hitters to start out would be either, you know, put Underdog scoring into your projection system of choice and see what it spits out in terms of total points, or, you know, find an analyst or someone you trust, find their rankings or projections, because I think the hardest part is separating the positions, and infield is just infield. So right now I know in like the NFBC, Jose Ramirez goes extremely early because he plays third base, and third base is kind of a shallow position. It's shaping up for this year. But in Underdog, you know, third base is the same thing as first base. It's all infield, first, second, third, short, and catcher. So there's not as much of a worry there about positional scarcity. And what we're actually seeing is that the positional scarcity comes down to infield versus outfield, and that outfield is much scarcer. That's kind of been, if there's been a narrative since this tournament launched that carried over from what a lot of smart people figured out in 2022, it's that outfield is a lot scarcer than infield. One of the pieces I had up on Underdog Network just last week was about this. And I put Underdog scoring system into Steamer projections. And of the top 100 hitters that it spit out, just 100 being a round number, 65 of them were infielders. Only 35 were outfielders. And then of those, 9 of the first 14 were outfielders. So what that creates is a situation where if you don't get an outfielder early on Underdog, you're really going to be chasing them in the middle rounds, and then the later rounds are going to kind of cripple your whole draft. So I think, you know, my very first piece of advice for Underdog drafts this year is round one. Even if you're taking the seventh outfielder off the board, I just want an outfielder in round one, because there's not going to be a lot coming up.
That's interesting, because, that's even like a conversation point in regular drafts right now, and like roto formats, is five outfielder leagues, how quick it dries up. And obviously it's in a five outfielder league, but when you're talking points-based and whatnot, it does change things in a quick way. And I love the point you made on J-Ram, because like he's my number one in a roto format, but that's because of the scarcity, and obviously still an elite bat, like an elite talent. And you look at the projections, he's projected for 1642 points, which is great, but he's only the second infielder off the board after pick 10 basically, and that's just because of the outfield depth, as you mentioned. You mentioned taking at least one outfielder early on. When you're looking to build a team, obviously there's so many formats you can do. What kind of like finishing numbers do you want per position potentially?
Yeah, so this is something we actually just ran the data behind the scenes at Underdog, and I'm still waiting on like the full report to come out of everything that happened last year. So there's going to be a lot more, you know, content around that to come out, and that's, this game's only going to get more and more efficient, and that's why kind of figuring some of this stuff out early will lead to a big advantage. I think, you know, the outfield situation has kind of been, you know, noticed by a lot of people now. And I think what could be next is the aces and starting pitchers, what, you know, you noticed about just look, taking a quick look at the ADP. But what I also wanted to mention about, you know, find your projection system of choice or your favorite analyst's rankings and, you know, strictly look at those points, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where those points come from. You just want to score. It's not like you need stolen bases. It's not like you need to start a third base and a catcher. It's, you just want to get the most points. So whether that means having a perfectly balanced roster of, you know, eight pitchers, six infielders, six outfielders, or, you know, going lopsided in one direction is, it doesn't necessarily matter. And especially for infielders, you just want to be looking at, you know, that points projection total and kind of getting it out of your head. Okay, this guy's a second baseman, second base scarce. And I know that's tough to do. One thing that the Underdog scoring does do by combining all infielders, it really kills catchers. So like, yeah, Adley's going to get drafted and, you know, JT Realmuto is going to get drafted, but their value is just not the same as it normally is in regular fantasy.
You can almost just like, it's like that and relievers. You're not taking relievers, obviously, because saves was not a category involved here. So it definitely changes that mindset as well as we do that more and more. So we got our 12 teams. We got 20 players, infield, outfield, pitcher. We got points based. You mentioned guys build portfolios. Obviously, you can't build a 150 team portfolio where you work. But what have you heard potentially? Like, are there certain percentages guys are looking to do? Is there certain like strategies you've seen be more successful last year that they might not carry over this year because things change? But is there like a format or a strategy that people are trying to hone in on?
Yeah. So I don't want to you know, speak in absolutes if I don't have like the exact data and everything. And again, like this stuff is all coming. And that's why I think we're at a point in these drafts where there's a lot of value to be gained if you can figure some of this stuff out. So answering your other question though, about like how many of each position should you take? I think that a lot of people's natural assumption is to go balanced. And I think that's totally fine. It's viable, but you also don't have to. Something in football that a lot of people talk about is drafting as if you're right. And if you're going to go with a bit of like a hero RB build, you're going to take one or two running backs early, then you're just going to fade that position. Because if those running backs don't work out, there's no point in getting running backs later because your best players aren't working out. And I think there's a case to be made for that with outfield. I think if you do get one of those top picks in a draft and you can secure, you know, especially like a Judge or Soto, odds are he's going to be giving you points every single week. So I would say that you could draft less of that position and then load up more on taking, you know, a lot of shots at infield where, you know, you just want to keep rolling the dice to get the top three scores.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Each week.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a ton of sense. And that kind of led me to one of my questions I wrote down here. You mentioned like you don't really want to punt a position, but in football, there's the zero running back strategy. Have you heard of anything like, I doubt you go zero outfielder, but do you go like you don't want to go zero ace pitcher because you know you lose quality starts. But have you seen a strategy where guys are like, I'm just going to punt this one thing and go with like that zero approach?
Yeah, so infield is definitely the spot to wait on, because as we've talked about just in this little bit of discussion, and again, this is, you know, what I think is right to do. And, you know, pretty soon I'm going to have all like the exact data and information to back it up. That's I just didn't want to, you know, come out and say we saw this percent of teams win using the strategy and whatnot. But that's what's cool about best ball too. We've seen a lot of that on underdog, you know, kind of that macro level analysis of the positions to draft. And then it's on the individual player to say, okay, I know I want to take a starting pitcher in this spot. Who is going to end up being better, Justin Verlander or Spencer Strider, things like that. So I think, sorry, what was the, I lost my train of thought.
Like the zero running, the zero running back approach. Is that, is there anything similar to that in the baseball side of it? You said infield would be the way to go, but is there like a, have you seen it be like, I guess successful is not the right word, but have you seen it be utilized often?
Yeah. I think like the dream scenario, if you're starting a draft right now, is to get an outfield, at least one in your first round. Brian Reynolds ADP is like 26.1. Like that's what I'm talking about. Like the outfield is getting pushed up like that. That seems really crazy to
that's
me.
Wild.
And wild. You don't want to be, you know, reaching for those outfielders. But what happens if you do take, you know, if you get the sixth pick and you take Trey Turner, then you're going to come to a point in rounds three or four where you're like, oh, I don't have much outfield and there's none out here. So I would say the dream draft scenario right now is to get like one or two outfielders in your first couple picks, just secure the best ones. And then start mixing in infielders and ace pitchers. The thing about infield is that I'm going to post this graph on Twitter tomorrow. It's a bit of like a trend line over it's like ADP on the x-axis and then points scored on the y-axis for pitchers, infielders, and outfielders. And what you see is that the infield, it stays kind of level throughout, especially late in the draft. Taking an infielder in round, you know, 13 versus round 18 isn't going to be that big of a difference, but taking a starting pitcher in round 10 versus round 18 is going to be an enormous difference. Yeah. So there's kind of an argument to be made that you can always wait an extra round on infield, but what you're going to want to do is make sure you got, you know, at least one or two outfielders early, make sure you get your aces, and then be mixing in infield throughout. Don't completely ignore it, you know, but just mix them in throughout.
No, that makes a ton of sense. Don't like ignore, but you can definitely play the game a little bit. I think it's one thing like I love doing. I know I'm not the only one. A lot of people do this to play fantasy sports is you go through ADP and you try to find hidden values and this, that, and the other, where to jump them in ADP, when to jump them a round or two per se and whatnot. Obviously, if you're doing a 30-second draft, plan ahead. If you're doing 8 hours, you got time to tinker with it. But you mentioned the Brian Reynolds thing, how quickly he comes up there. I guarantee you anybody that's new to this would not have thought that. That is, would not even have been an option. So it's good to probably go through that ADP a couple times just to get an idea of where things go. You may have said this already, and I apologize if you didn't. The projections that are kind of how the ADP is based there, you've mentioned Steamer and some other things. How did you guys come up with those projections? Is that the ones you got from Steamer you're talking about, or is that a different format?
So at the very beginning of the tournament, I ran everything through Steamer just to get like a base idea and value. We have since then pivoted to like a third party projection system provider. So what you'll see in the projections in your drafts right now for each player isn't, you know, it's not Steamer. It's not, it's like our own projections with, you know, our stat provider and all that stuff. So what I think is good about that is then, you know, this is something that I'm doing once, you know, the Bad X comes out, is I'm going to run underdog scoring system through that. And you could do ATC projections, again, whatever your preferred projection system is. I think that that's going to be a way to get an edge. What I like about us having our own right now and not using another publicly available one is, you know, I'm looking at the projections right now for some of our players, and there's, you know, some that I just straight up don't agree with. And again, this tournament's only been out for 2 weeks, so if you can identify those and take advantage by either targeting them late or fading them early, I think there's, you know, money to be made in that sense.
I know a lot of players that do 5x5 leagues, especially Roto, like when they're drafting, they'll have like a spreadsheet of like targeted numbers they want to finish the draft with, and home runs and RBIs and all that. We look at the projection numbers on the ADP, you know, Aaron Judge is projected for 1,601 points, so on and so forth. Is there like targets you guys think people should aim for when they're drafting for, like, I don't know if positions are the best, but maybe like an in-game target to be competitive in your league. Like, we talk about the upper, like, 75th, 80th percentile in leagues to cash. Do you think there's a number we should potentially target to finish at based on the projections for these drafts?
I love this question so much because it's going to lead to more discussion and debate and discourse over, you know, the optimal strategy to take. And I know I'm like teasing all this data I'm about to get from this past season, but like when it does come, we're just going to have so much to play with. And the whole thing is going to be released publicly too on Underdog Network for people to download themselves and play around with. I know there's some content creators on Twitter who have done that with Underdog, both baseball and football data in the past. So I think I don't have those numbers right now, but I think that's the type of edge that if someone figures out, you know, what to be aiming for, that is something that someone should be doing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering, because it's like we kind of look back at like historical data and it's like, okay, this is usually the rough number here, this is usually the rough number here, so on and so forth. We use our steamers. The Bad X is coming out this week, later this week, I heard. That means ATC is coming out like the week later. So all your projections that we all like to use. And then people try to, like, you know, put them in their systems and everything's way past my pay grade. But they're good with computers and they figure all that out. And that's why I was thinking this is an edge and this is where my brain goes. That's why I wanted to talk to you about all this is I know there's an angle to try to, quote unquote, exploit the system if possible. I'm not quite there yet to figure that out, but maybe I can point someone in the right direction to figure it out for us. But it's very interesting looking at all that and trying to figure out the optimal, because it's just so different, as we talked about. Like, and that's what I like about, like I said, is the points based. It's the roster. The roster more than anything is what gets me. Like, that's what makes it so different, because we can play points. We know points. If you're into fantasy, you can figure out points. So if you don't, then you're just, in my opinion, no offense, anybody, stubborn. You just don't want to try to learn it. Like, it's really not that hard. If you watch baseball and like fantasy baseball, you can figure out points pretty easily. It's the format. It's the three infield, three outfield, a flex, and three pitchers. That's where you have to maximize things. And that's where it really, the strategy, I think, comes into play in a big, big way. When you're looking at early drafts so far, per se, or any early data you have looked at, are there any players that really stand out to you that, like you mentioned, Brian Reynolds goes early, J-Ram goes 10th, which would surprise people. Are there any players that kind of stand out to, like, wow, they're going late, or wow, they're going way too early? Like, you don't have to give away all the secrets. I know you mentioned there's certain things that stand out to you, but just for like the novice players that might be listening to this, is there anything that kind of stands out, or maybe something they can look at to help them figure out what stands out?
Yeah, I think this is kind of what I consider, you know, the really fun part. I think it's fun to talk about these macro trends and, you know, the fall off from SP 36 to SP 72 is bigger than outfield 36 to outfield 72. So like, those are the big picture ideas. Again, you know, outfield first round, mix in some aces that are undervalued right now, infield late, that sort of thing. And then it's like, okay, great, but which player should you actually be taking? Because I find I myself spend so much time on, you know, league wide trends and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, the players you need, to win are going to be the ones who perform the best. Like, all this data was great going into last year, but if you had Aaron Judge on your underdog team last year, you know, odds are you advanced to the playoffs and probably had a good season. Same with Paul Goldschmidt. He's someone who, if anyone had identified, there was no macro level trend to suggest that Paul Goldschmidt was going to be a league winner for underdog drafts. But if you had taken him, even though infield was deep around the point in the drafts that he was going, then again, you did very well. So I think those are things to keep in mind. In terms of actual players, though, that's like what's the most fun part to talk about. And what I'm going to spend, you know, most of February and March on is honing in on, you know, players. That's what we all do, right? We all like to say, like, oh, like last year for me, like Shane McClanahan was my guy going into the year. And I just like loved him. I was touting him, you know, he ended up working out for me, but it doesn't always work out that way. I thought, again, like the first place that my mind goes to is some of these pitchers. It feels like within fantasy baseball Twitter right now, everyone is staking their early claim to Christian Javier, who I mentioned already, but he's one who on a site like Underdog, just like the hype hasn't caught up in the sense of where he's going, you know, on the NFBC right now.
Yeah, sorry, I'm looking at an ADP. Can continue on here, but one just stood out. Like, how's Kevin Gausman going 73rd behind these guys?
Yeah, no, so like Kevin Gausman's SP 20 right now. Like, he goes, Kevin Gausman's going like one pick before Anthony Santander. So,
okay, there's a bunch of guys down here I'm already liking for quality starts. This is fun. I'm going to start drafting here pretty soon, but sorry, continue on as you were.
Yeah. So I think, again, Christian Javier is like an easy one where just, even though he's not like necessarily like a quality starts darling, at least he hasn't been yet. He's just someone who, he reminds me a lot of McClanahan as someone who can kind of like take that leap into the next stratosphere. So anyway, it's a long way of me saying I've been so focused on these bigger picture topics that I haven't even done, you know, a full audit of like what ADP looks like. I'm again scrolling down. Corbin Carroll seems like he's going like decently late, and he's hopefully going to lead off every day and accumulate a ton of plate appearances and walks and all that stuff. Vinny Pasquantino is going, has an ADP of 97. That is, you know, seems very exploitable. And then yeah, like a guy like Logan Webb down here at 107.6. There's and these guys are all going way after Anthony Santander, who we just talked about. And that's why I think you got to get those outfield early. If, you know, it takes one or two drafts, I think, and then a lot of people will, you know, start really picking up on this.
And obviously these pitchers, we keep like, I'll remind people they're going so much later because these hitters are getting pushed up, obviously. And that's what we're seeing in the NPC right now too. Like there's not a lot of early pitching going on, but I have a feeling like in NPC that'll change as we get closer to the start of the season and people start seeing these inadequacies or differences, as you mentioned, and we can start picking it apart a little more, I should say. So like, yeah, just looking at some of these pitchers down here, you mentioned Logan Webb, like, Kershaw's kind of broken, but that's interesting. But like, Charlie Morton's down here at 130. We mentioned him. You got some young guys that were really good towards the end and down here super late. Wow, so like 12 rounds, 240 round draft. Like some of these guys are going way late in these drafts. This is interesting. Any hitters that kind of stand out to you? You mentioned Santander. Let me ask you this question. Is there multi-position eligibility? Are there any infielder outfielder combos?
All right, yeah, that's another great question. I wanted to address Shohei Ohtani so there's no multi-position eligibility. I know there are some other, you know, sites and platforms that do draft and hold that, you know, still have that multi-position eligibility, and in my opinion those players are, you know, gold in formats like that. But we just have the one position, whatever they're listed at is what they are. We combine DHs with outfield, so like JD Martinez is an outfielder, he'll just show up as outfield. Shohei Ohtani, because he's a DH, shows up as outfield, and he's just a hitter for us. It's just one of those like stat provider things that like, I wish it wasn't that way. I want to find a way to like change that in the future. But for now, that's the way we do it. As you, I just wanted to piggyback on what you said about you were like scrolling down. So yeah, if you want to get an idea for like players who are going undrafted, it's about 240 in ADP. That 240 players get drafted. So that's when you'll see, the fall off. And then basically everyone just has like the same ADP. I would say there's definitely a case to be made to scroll down at the end of your draft. Let's say you're in round 19, 20. One thing that can help a lot in an overall contest, if you're doing one of the big tournaments, is uniqueness. So let's just say that you are in round 20 and you pick the first person in the queue, a ton of other people are probably picking that player. So even if your team does well and you make it to the finals, someone else might have that player. But if you scroll down where there's not going to be a huge difference in projection anyway, and you take someone who maybe it's, you know, a prospect right now, because like at this time last year, who would have thought, you know, Julio would have been on the opening day roster, or whether it's a prospect or just an upside pick you like, or just someone you think is undervalued, don't be afraid to scroll down at the end of the drafts, because being unique and having a unique setup is a really good thing, because it'll help you separate if you do get to those final rounds of the tournament. And again, that's another reason why, like, yeah, if you get the first pick and get Aaron Judge, maybe you have a build where you only go three or four outfielders, and then you just load up on, you know, infield or something, whatever it is. But yeah, don't be afraid to be unique is, you know, another little bit of advice for anyone starting out.
Yeah, and I'd really recommend people check out OBP more, because just looking at, I just have the infielders queued up here, and it'll really make more sense why certain guys are going much higher than they usually go. Like, and I'm a big fan of, like, say, Rhys Hoskins. He's an OBP machine. Corey Seager, he moved up here. One that stood out a bunch, if you look at the outfield, the 10th outfielder off the board is Kyle Schwarber at an ADP of 16. So like you wouldn't see that in a 5x5 league ever. He's going literally in the second round of these drafts. So Keith, it's a combination of the outfield going early and the OBP skills that Kyle Schwarber brings to the table. So things like that to run through there. Anything else that stands out in best ball that you'd like to discuss before we kind of talk some in-season talk? Because this best ball, it's going to be great. Like, we'll probably talk again sometime as things change and more data comes out and whatnot. But it's just talking to you briefly so far, there's so many nuances to it. There's so many ways to attack it. There's so many things to dig in on. Like, there's a lot to it, which is fun, which is part of the game. It makes it definitely a strategy based thing, which, or just make it fun. $5, go do your 30-second draft. Is there anything else on the best ball you'd like to discuss?
Yeah, so I think eventually, as we get close to March and April, there'll be a lot more discussion about individual players. And, you know, that I always say, like, that's the fun part. Right now, my brain is such in the headspace of, we got to figure out, you know, the big picture trends. But the only other thing I'll say as a case, because this is what I'm writing about right now, hopefully publish it later this week, but the case to be made for some of these aces early, just to, you know, get people to try to conceptualize why the aces are so important, is because on a season long level, the hitters are going to score more than the pitchers. But on a weekly level, it's not uncommon for an ace pitcher to have a dominant start and be one of the high scorers for the week. And then if you have a two start pitcher who has two dominant starts, that is what really tips the scales in terms of making your team really dominant. So the reason that I like having so many aces early and not even worrying about, you know, Luis Ortiz and those late round, you know, upside picks is because if you can start stacking dominant starts on a weekly basis and you just get some cluster luck and they all come at once. And then if you can do that with like two start pitchers, you'll just see the points on a weekly basis, start piling up really, really fast.
I like it. I like it a lot. And just a reminder to people, you can play the best ball for the season long. Don't play 12 team leagues, individual leagues for the season long. It's not all best ball. Same format though, so get used to that. But there's obviously more risk you may want to take for the overall type thing. At the same time, maybe more security because you want to count those innings and those at-bats. It's kind of a catch 22 in that regard. But you can do both. Do both and have a lot of fun there. Let's shift to in season, which I think is something that I don't like. I think people at least know best ball when it comes to underdog. I don't think people understand how much is offered in season, especially with baseball, because football's king in anything you do, not just underdog, anything. That's just the reality of it all. But with baseball, you still have your individual tournaments, daily tournaments. What are you guys offering there? It's just daily. There's not like weekly or monthly. It's just daily, right?
Yeah. So there is some daily contests like every day during the baseball season. There's two things. There's drafts, like just, you know, nightly, daily drafts, like, hey, I'm in with six other people. You draft, you know, one or two starting pitchers and then four hitters and just whoever scores the most points. And those are fun on a daily basis because if you can identify the best matchups, you know, obviously not for the season, for best ball, we're talking about, you know, season long projections, but for a daily contest, it's really just that night. So there's all sorts of different sizings for those daily drafts and depends on the slate, all that stuff. And then the pick'ems, which I'm personally the most bullish on, not just on underdog, but just kind of, you know, within the fantasy space. I think I got a big football background too, and we're seeing, you know, player props both on the season long and daily, weekly level just be so interesting. I think we're seeing a lot less fans approach sports and therefore fantasy sports from such a loyal team perspective and more from a player analysis perspective, just the younger generation coming up and up. So anyways, again, that's just a long way of saying that like our pick'em slips, whether it's, you know, okay, Sandy Alcantara over under 6.5 strikeouts, and then I'm going to parlay that with Juan Soto over 2.5 total bases, I think is going to be a real big thing that we're going to see not just on underdog this year, but everywhere. And it will be offered on underdog though.
Awesome. I can't wait to see more about that. Cause like I said, I know there's the K props and some other props. I was aware of that, but you mentioned like kind of the pick'em that you're doing kind of almost like a parlay type setup. There's other systems that do similar things right now. Obviously it's everywhere, like you said, and it's the way of the world. Like people don't want to use the B word, but sports betting is becoming bigger than fantasy in reality. That's just the brass tacks of it all. Sucks for guys like myself, I love fantasy and other people, but sports betting is taking over the world. It's just kind of how it goes, and hopefully fantasy kind of keeps going with it. Let's just hope that's the trend. But it kind of goes hand in hand in reality. If you're doing the right research, you should be able to, like you said, if we're grinding like we grind all season and in season, the daily sports betting should help too. That should be all part of the deal. So that's very, very interesting. I guess for the in-season content, you mentioned the prop bets, the daily things, the matchups, where there's like three, isn't there, like there's head, you can do like head to heads, there's three team, there's all different sizes, right, for the daily matchup deals.
Yeah, and I should add that this too is going to be something that it's, in my opinion, such in its infancy that anyone who, you know, starts figuring out the edges is going to have. So whether that's like, you know, Michael Simeone, the SB streamer with you guys, if he just, you know, finds the right balance to strike of when to take overs or unders, or what like the mark is for too high of a total for, you know, Underdog or any other site to have, there's just going to be a lot of money to be made in that sense too. And I think what you said about fantasy and, you know, sports betting or pick'ems going hand in hand is so many fantasy players already do the hard work. It's, yeah, I'm grinding waivers in July and Andre Jimenez has been on a heater for the past month. And so that's someone who you should maybe be taking their pick'em slips, you know, as long as that is going on, because people aren't catching up to it on a, you know, sports betting or pick'em slip level as much as they are, you know, necessarily in your NFBC main event.
No, and that's what's that's what I love about it. Cause like I said, I do a daily Monday through Friday, I do quick hits for DFS. I go over to the DraftKings slate, and then that'll obviously correlate. I'm going to bring Underdog stuff into it this year, because with GT and everything, I can like do a couple props I like or whatever. That brings up my question. When do the props for the following day go up?
Usually,
I know it's different. I know it's different, but like sometimes I record the night before and they're not up, but sometimes they are. So like, do you guys have like a rough idea when they usually come up type deal?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I'm going to reach out to someone about that, and I'm going to DM you on the side to get you that answer.
Cause it varies for everywhere and day to day. I get it. Cause sometimes you want injuries. You don't want to like throw out a number and totally get screwed, where like everyone, like right now today, LeBron got announced out like midday. Well, there were prop bets in the morning with LeBron playing. Obviously, like then they just took everybody off the board and it changed. So like when you have stuff at night and you don't know the starting pitchers and all that, I get it. I get where it makes it tricky. Like, so I'm not trying to pressure you on this. I'm just curious as a content creator side of things.
So one thing I'll plug about Underdog then, which is a big part of what I do on a daily basis, is so we have that account at Underdog_MLB. We, you know, think we're the fastest in the industry at getting the news out. And last year we really focused on lineups. Getting lineups at who's playing, who's not playing. And I think what we found is a lot, again, we're already doing so much of the hard work, is we were starting to really pick up on, you know, players returning from the IL, players going on the IL, all sorts of stuff. So if, you know, anyone listening is time sensitive in terms of getting this information of a prospect being called up or a player going on the IL or a player returning, I really recommend following Underdog MLB. Because I know our process for the news and how it works and how seriously we take it. We have the NFL account as well, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be first on, you know, most everything that goes down in season.
And this is not me kissing Brendan's butt here, but I will second that, because there's not a lot of apps I have alerts set for, but MLB and their NFL app, I have both of those. That every time there's an injury, if there's a lineup, like I get that alert, and it is literally before. Like you see a Jeff Passan tweet sometimes, like, or it's almost simultaneously. So it's like literally they're on it right when it happens. So I use it all the time, because, you know, we can't sit on Twitter 24/7 and wait for everything to happen. So I get an alert, boom, boom, done. And it's just, it helps with so many things. It is by far, I've done this for a long time. I've tried to follow many other apps. I'm not going to name names or accounts on Twitter, I should say, by far the fastest ones and most accurate ones. I'll say that much. They at least check before they just start throwing information out there. So I will say that for sure, that he's not lying to you. It's actually one of the better ones out there by far. So definitely. All right. before we get to listener questions, do you have anything else for Underdog Baseball before we do listener questions? Because I have one other question, non-baseball related, but do you have anything else you'd like to cover on the baseball side of things before we head on out of that?
I think that's everything for now. I'm otherwise, I forget if I even said this at the top or if you did, but I'm on Twitter, like at Too Much Tuma. And I think this conversation around all Underdog best ball for baseball. And then, you know, once we get to the in-season stuff, I'm really looking forward to that part of it, because I'm just trying to surround myself with as many smart people as possible, baseball, fantasy baseball, underdog wise, all three of those things. And I think when you do that and you just start hopping into conversations, doing a little bit of your own research, that's where you can really grow. And that's where, again, there's a lot of people who this time last year, the outfield thing wasn't as well known. And a lot of people did really well and made a lot of money because they figured that out. And I think, you know, the aces are next, and, you know, who knows what's going to be after that. So, I'm just excited for more of the conversation to be had.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. And again, like I said, if when more things come out that we can talk about, I'm looking forward to chatting with you some more. It's a very, it's not a new product, but it kind of is new to the baseball world. So I think it's very enticing and it should be used more often. So I was very excited when Mike Kirlin proposed to us as a group. I'm like, yeah, guys, like I used to kind of do stuff on the side way back when with the football side. I'm like, yeah, do this. It's just to do it. Don't be stupid. So I was very much in line with that. Before listener questions, though, you have football and baseball are kind of the popular ones that you run. Obviously, basketball's big. You guys have other sports, too. Do you want to mention anything else? I know you don't run the other sports, but there's like for all people out there, there's more than just the main ones. You could play this all day, almost everywhere, doing anything.
I know. And the comment you had about football being king, it just rang so true to me. Anywhere I've worked fantasy-wise, that's been as a mm-hmm. – I love football. Baseball is my number one. And as a uber baseball fan, it's been beaten into my brain that, you know, football's yep. king with a lot of the stuff, but baseball's coming, and, you know, baseball has its time in March, April, May, especially. Yep. So, yeah, we had a ton of coverage with the World Cup. I mean, any sport that you want to think of, we have like a news account for. So we have Underdog NBA, we have Underdog Golf, we have Underdog Soccer, and there's all sorts of, you know, interesting games that we have for all those sports as well. Again, I don't know anything about golf or soccer, but I know that a lot of people really like, you know, the news accounts and the games we offer for it. Golf seems like it's becoming really popular.
It's picking up a lot.
And then again, I'm not an NBA guy at all, but our Underdog NBA Twitter account is like, it's even crazier than the football one. Mainly because of the, you know, team who runs it, but people love NBA for the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, I just want to plug that for anybody that's listening that wants to try Underdog. It's not just baseball, not just football. There's tons of things. Use promo code GTE for 100% off match of a first deposit up to $100 with the GTE. All right. I'm going to say MLB moving average. Big John Studd has a question because he does a lot of research. He's one of the smart ones. He spends a lot of time on this. He's dug into the outfield. He knows all those things. So he says, He says, right now it's all about the press for outfielders, as you mentioned. If you drop pick 10 through 12, though, you have a big decision. It's hard to pass on J-Ram and Trey to push up a Rosarena, and a sub 800 OPS is wild in the Underdog streets. What would you do on the wheel? Like, what would you recommend when you see it? Because you kind of mentioned it. It's like, okay, you need to leave with at least one outfielder. So that's kind of, I think, where you're going with this. Like, take J-Ram, take Trey, one of the two, grab an outfielder. But I guess what you're saying, it's tough to stomach pushing on a Rosarena above these guys. So I guess we kind of talked about it, but what do you say on that?
Yeah, I want to give John a shout out because when I first got to Underdog last year, I was seeing, okay, who's making baseball content for our games? And there wasn't a lot of people, but John was one of them and his articles popped up. So I definitely recommend following him if you want to just be part of these conversations and figuring out those edges. I read this question on Twitter and I started going to the ADP and I was like, it kind of threw me for a loop a bit. So I think John, he's exaggerating a little bit about a Rosarena going that high, but his point is he's the same type to me as the Brian Reynolds thing where it's like, am I really going to take Brian Reynolds with, you know, my third pick or Rosarena with my third pick in a points based situation? And I think that if you are at the 1-2 turn, and you know, J-Ram and Trey Turner are sitting there, there's Kyle Tucker's around there, Kyle Schwarber. After that, it's a big fall off after school, especially. So I think Tucker's like that last, like really premium outfielder. Schwarber's right there too. I just want one of them, and then you can combine it with like J-Ram or Trey. But I think that's a case. I hadn't even thought about this until, you know, that question was asked and I'm talking it through out loud here, but I think it's a case that it's, you know, more beneficial to have. You don't necessarily need the first pick, but I think having like a top 7 or 8 pick, again, to just secure one of those outfielders is really advantageous this year.
That brings me to a question then. How does the draft order get determined?
It's just random when you go in. And again, that's why a lot of people like to play from a volume perspective, because let's say you do 100 drafts. Let's just say you got the first pick 9 times. Maybe you don't want to take Aaron Judge, all of those. Like maybe you want to mix in, you know, a Juan Soto or Ronald Acuña or however it is you want to go about it. But yeah, I definitely think if you go in your draft and you get, you know, a top 7, 8 pick, that it's, you know, something worth smiling about. And to John's point, his question about what to recommend, looking at those point totals from like even Trey and J-Ram versus Schwarber is a big difference. And I think, like you said, like there's people who are smarter than us who are going to plug some stuff into projection systems and figure some of the stuff out, what the optimal move there is. I don't want to be too sensitive about the outfield is scarce thing. And I want to lean into the idea that points are points and they're going to come from everywhere. So I think that by the end of round one, one of J-Ram or Trey or Freddie Freeman or Vlad or whichever infielder falls is, you know, basically a must have there. And then I would love to pair them with Tucker. And yeah, it looks like after Schwarber is, you know, the really big fall off for outfield.
Yeah, projection wise, it goes like 1,100 points real quick. So it's you're talking about a 400 point gap after a while, and that adds up a ton. I'm gonna ask this because he asked it. If you can't answer it, I totally get it. The real Motown Mahler said, "Why can't they play underdog in Michigan anymore?" I'm pretty sure it's like all gambling or not gambling sites, fantasy sites that. You can only do them in certain states based on certain litigation that's out of your control.
Yeah. I can't keep up myself with it. And it's not just underdog. It's, whether it's, you know, FanDuel or DraftKings or whatever gambling or fantasy site goes out there. So I personally can't even keep up. Where I live in Massachusetts, you can do everything on underdog, but you can't, but we don't have sports betting. Yeah. So it's, you know, every state's different. The laws change, you know, seemingly, you know, every few years or something. So it's not an underdog thing. Like we want to be as everywhere we can be, obviously. And so it's more just like a state thing that's going to, you know, eventually take some time to fully roll out. I think it'll look a lot different 5-10 years from now.
Yeah.
Not just for us, but for, you know, the whole industry.
It's just so weird because like you said, in Massachusetts, you get that example. I know like Arizona, you can bet and play like DK FanDuel now, but you can't play NFBC. Like in Vegas is the biggest gambling area of the world, and you can't play DFS. Like, what are we doing here? It makes it just the whole thing is just it's all about money for politicians. Just remember that in the end. That's what it's all about. And until the right things happen, that's just how it's gonna be. Let's see here. Oh, John, MLB moving average. You mentioned how smart he is. It's like I know he is. He also said I have a good tip for novices, because drafts move fast. If at the computer, open a second tab with rankings rather than shift by queue mid-draft. He just has the site and second tab saved. Helps things a lot. Makes sense. From the GTE Gain the Edge Discord, any insight into what they're thinking for size of their contest they'll release closer to the season? You mentioned the $25 one. How big do you think that's going to roll? Because that's your big guy. That's obviously what you're going for. How big do you think that's going to be?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It hasn't been finalized yet. We try to get bigger every year. I do know for sure that it'll be $25. It'll be called the Dinger. That's the same as last year. Again, that's kind of like the Best Ball Mania version of what we have for baseball. And then there will be another, most likely, $5 tournament around that same time. So one of my biggest pushes, just, you know, with, you know, my job and everything, is to, you know, really get this word out about this bullpen tournament. And I think the better that this tournament does, and then the better that the Dinger does, and then the better that the in-season stuff does. You know, there's a lot of really cool, I think one thing underdog's been known for, not so much on the baseball side yet, but with our other sports, is just having interesting contests. So like for football, we have like a rookies and sophomores thing. Like I'd love to do something like that with baseball. I'd love to do like a pitching only tournament well, with baseball quick. Was.
It's funny you mentioned that. It's funny you mentioned that because his second question here, have they thought about other formats like they do with football, maybe NL, AL only, smaller drafts that use actual positions like first base, second base? So similar, he said all pitch, you know, like an NL only draft or an AL only draft or stuff like that. Is that something you sounds like you want it to go there, but we kind of have to build the product up first to expand to that.
Yeah, so that's stuff that's on my mind, you know, rookies and sophomores pitching only, second half of the season, you know, all sorts of things like that. We did have a playoff contest last year that was really cool. So all sorts of things like that are definitely on my mind and things that I'm constantly pushing for. And so far the bullpen's doing like really well. It's almost like 40% filled already. It's only been a couple weeks. And yeah, the better that all that stuff does, the more I think that we'll be able to get out there, you know, in terms of like interesting and different contests, because what's going to happen is a lot of, you know, things like the bullpen and the dinger, this scoring format, it will eventually get exposed and it will be efficient. And then eventually we're going to need to throw another wrinkle. And then eventually we'll have to have all these other tournaments. I find it funny. Like one thing we didn't even talk about here is like all like the rule changes and everything. Yeah. And that's just like, there's players changing teams, the rule changes, the different score. Like there's so many different ways to come in and attack. Not just our best ball right now, but you know, just fantasy in general. Every year, the past 4 years, it feels like
something's always different. Like which baseball are they going to use? Like there's so many things that are going to change in that reality. And then, you know, for fun, I think I know your answer here, but he also said, do you anticipate baseball being the second biggest sport for season long best ball?
That's a good question. I'd have to look at the numbers. Again, I'm not an NBA person at all. But I'm not sure how they do. But, you know, I'm very focused on baseball and making it as big as it can be. So, you know, I love talking with, you know, people like yourself who are just like, it's January and, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, the Diamondbacks depth chart. Like, I love that stuff.
That's what we live for. And that's why we're going to try to fill this bad boy up. We're going to have to make a bullpen too here. That's the goal. Just like you with the puppy. You have like four puppies. Like, we're going to make a bunch of bullpens. We need depth charts for that. Jason at Woo 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 J Train says, the 11th, 12th is outfield depth because I agree. Can't pass on two. Oh, he's answering John's thing. But if you go two infielder spots, you're essentially sitting on one of Mullins, Robert at the next turn, assuming you don't want two pitchers. Okay, so that's where he's at there. But then he also had another question here that dropped while we were recording. I'm trying to figure out how much to care about stacking. This is a great question. It's quite hard to do with the elite offenses, but even some of the mid to upper mid-tier offenses are hard to stack without really reaching. It's a great question because like we saw it a few years ago, if you stack like the Jays, you crushed. There's always certain teams that go nuts. It's obviously also kind of hard based on the draft. Like, how do you make it work? Do you reach? So on and so forth. But like, I made the joke in NFBC right now, like the Brewers are super cheap and you wouldn't be shocked if they were productive. I'm assuming they're pretty cheap in this format too. I haven't even looked, but I'm guessing they are. Have you seen a strategy like that work? We're stacking a team because it makes sense, especially in an overall. If that team goes bonkers, your team's going to elevate quickly. And we see it in DFS, but it's different for season long. Have you thought of that at all or seen that at all?
Yeah, so I want to shout out my guy. He's on Twitter. It's like at it's baseball, but it's, you know, at B3ISBOL. He's doing a lot of analysis on, you know, underdog MLB best ball, and he's exploring the idea of stacking. And again, this is something that I'm about to get my hands on, like how 2022 teams did stacking wise. But he has some theories about the optimal approach, and something that we're looking at together is it's not so much about like, okay, I'm going for this one Blue Jay stack and I'm going to take six Blue Jays hitters. It's more about having a few mini stacks and trying to view the game through spike weeks. So like what I talked about with like aces and starting pitchers, if you get that two start week from Gerrit Cole and he goes off, like you're going to score so many points just from him. And if you have three Blue Jays, four Angels and four Red Sox, and it works out that they have a ton of games that week and they have a ton of great matchups, and you know, all those teams just, you know, go off, you're going to be in a really good position. So I'll have some data to back this up coming out, you know, before the season starts, of course. But in general, it's not about, you know, here's my one stack and I have six players from that team. It's about having a few mini stacks built in, especially with players who hit near each other in the order. So like having Vlad with like Danny Jansen isn't going to like do a whole lot. But if, you know, you get those top of the order guys, like Brandon, if you're going for a Mets stack, like Brandon Nimmo, because we know he's going to lead off, is going to be like an example of someone who's really interesting.
I like that too, because also he's an OBP machine. So that's a very intriguing option. Yeah, because I remember doing like the NFL best balls, and you do make a point to try to stack a bit and go from there. And I'll retweet best at baseballs. Like you mentioned, he commented earlier in the day. He's got a whole spreadsheet and all kinds of cool stuff for people that are new to it. I'll retweet that. He attached it to our conversation. Last question I have here at Chase_Cop says, that's with two P's, projections wise, what is the best way to approach players that we expect to miss time due to injury, suspension, etc.? How many zeros do the season during the season is too many? Like Fernando Tatis might miss half month to a month. Byron Buxton guaranteed to miss a couple months, so on and so forth. Like, so how do you kind of project that in grand scheme? Like, how many zeros is too many?
I think it's a great question, because again, it's something that we're used to with football. If a player is going to start the season hurt, I think a big one, obviously for season-long fantasy, but for this format too, because he is going to be outfield eligible, is like Bryce Harper. Like, how long can you go taking those zeros, but you're trying to get Bryce Harper on your team for the final rounds of the Dinger tournament when all the money is being made. So this is, you know, very obvious, but you would want your players to be healthier towards the end of the season. So if someone's going to miss time, it's better. Like, I'd almost rather take Bryce Harper, because I know he's going to miss all this time up front, but then hopefully he's just going to come back and be fine. Whereas like Byron Buxton, I don't know if I'm going to have Byron Buxton in September when the money's being made, sort of thing. So I think, again, these are like great questions. And I'm really excited to be at the forefront of the conversation about all of them. And I would say that when it comes to someone like Harper or Tatis, if you can start building some of those, like let's say you get the first pick and you get Soto, maybe you should reach a little bit more on Tatis, because then you'll have that stack for, you know, September. If you've started out with Trey Turner and Rhys Hoskins, or, you know, whatever it is, like maybe reach a little bit on Harper to get him on your team as well. So again, this contest as presently constructed only has 1 year of data, and not even all of that has come out, although we did learn a lot of stuff during the season. So we're at the forefront of a lot of things right now. And again, we're still talking like macro level stuff. Mm-hmm. And if anyone just scrolls up ADP and says, you know, I think that this player is undervalued, like if someone did that with Paul Goldschmidt last year and they were drafting him everywhere, then, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to be ahead of the curve right now.
I love it. I love it. This has been a great conversation. I look forward to chatting with you more on this as the season, either in DMs or we do another show or whatever it is, because it's really fun to dig. I enjoy the other format idea things. Like, obviously, I do these podcasts for a while to do, you know, season long content, but there's something about this that just makes your mind work differently. That kind of it's very intriguing. Like you said, we're baseball guys. This is what we do. Like, we love digging into whatever, and they kind of all work together if you do it the right way. So I'm a big fan of that. Before we head out of here, go ahead and plug everything you want to plug with Underdog, whatever you got going on, where they can find you, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at TooMuchTuma. I kind of have like three things going on. It's, you know, Underdog, work for them, and we have our Twitter accounts. All my Underdog specific content is on Underdog Network. I then have my own free Substack, which is kind of just where I write to try to be creative and different. I like writing about prospects and dynasty and just whatever randomly is on my mind. And then I also have a Patreon that's only $5 a month, where I go, you know, a lot deeper on prospects and dynasty. And again, I all sorts of, you know, sports betting stuff, had a good year last year, and things like that. So like you said, like very similar to you, where it's, you know, I'm not just, you know, we're not just roto players. Yep. You know, we're baseball fans, and there's a lot of different ways to attack it and enjoy the game. And what I find is I have to remind myself every now and then to just sit back and watch a game and not have action on it and not care about my fantasy team, and, you know, just watch baseball for the enjoyment of it. So
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Like, I think what's also great, like, I kind of didn't really mention it, but say during the season, you just want to do like a daily tournament, but you don't want to do like DFS where you have to like worry about money and all these positions. Like, just do a quick like one, and then you have a little action for the night and you're good. Like, it's, you don't have to really think, you get a draft spot and you pick a team. Like, yep. There's really no consequences of it. It's fun in that regard as well. And it'll help you learn the format some more. I'll tell you that much. If you're kind of nervous, play those ones. We want you to play the bullpen and stuff. Don't get me wrong, but say you're nervous. Well, come on in when the season starts, do the little 3-man ones and get to learn it that way. You'll pick up on some trends. Won't help you win all the money like you will in the bullpen, but you can have some fun doing it. That's for sure. But yeah, we're going to wrap it up there. I had a great chat. Make sure you guys follow Brendan on Twitter at Too Much Tuma. Make sure you go to Underdog Fantasy and get all the goodies there, because it's going to be a fun year playing the bullpen and other things for fantasy baseball purposes, and then in-season props and much, much more. Go to Gaining the Edge on Patreon and join us there, or just sign up at Underdog if you're new. Use promo code GTE for 100% match bonus on your first deposit up to $100. All right, everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 534. Catch you guys later.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.